talking about demons. What are the demons?
Voices.
Tell me about it. What are the voices about?
It's another voice, the evil side.
Yeah, whatever your name is, Satan.
Thanks, everyone, again for joining us at Evil Examined. It's Aaron, your boy JP, and we're back with John the Aviator for the Most Credible UFO Cases, Volume 3, Episode 3, Part 3, whatever you want to call it. We left off with the gigantic, massive fucking UFOs over the English Channel in 2007. But you may be asking, you know, because we didn't talk about this in any of our prior episodes, have UFOs ever become a military Air Force target? Well, we're set to find that out, as well as a few other things today, as well as taking a look at the Pentagon press release with John the Aviator. Let's talk about it, though. First, head over to www.evilexamined.com to check out all of our content. Our extra evil posts are available in archive form. Check us out on Instagram, too, Evil Examined. We got all kinds of crazy shit going up there, dude. If you can rate us too, that's always appreciated. But we're not going to put too much of a spiel on the entrance here. Let's get right into it. So aside from the obvious, unlike civilian aircraft, military aircraft may have offensive capability and can be equipped with devastating weaponry. And John, are there other differences that you think we should know about before we move on?
As opposed to what? Military and...
and civilian. Like, is there any major differences that you can think of?
Well, military airplanes have very specific roles. Their attack, their bombers, their reconnaissance. Civilian aircraft are specifically designed to transport people. You know? And I mean that in the sense from an aerobatic airplane, you know, to a Boeing 757, 767. They're meant to safely transport somebody. So civilian airplanes could have been military airplanes in the past. There are civilian airplanes that become military airplanes. They're called something different, but it's pretty much the same airplane, and it's just equipped differently. But I think the biggest thing with military versus civilian airplanes are the rules that they fly with and their crew. Because military aircraft have specific missions when they go out, where civilian aircraft might be for private use or for commercial purposes, like just getting a group of people from point A to point B.
Good to know the distinctions, because I don't think the average person really thinks about those things. So we wanted to make sure you guys had that going in. But the answer to the question that we posed at the beginning, have UFOs ever become military targets? Have they ever taken shots at them? The answer is yes. Leslie Kane points out that two pilots gave accounts of their lengthy dogfights with UFOs. In this, we're going to head over to the Iranian general Pravis Jafari. And he was a major in the Air Force in 1976. When he was ordered by his commander to man his Phantom F-42 jet and approach a luminous UFO over Tehran, someone had spotted the object at about 6,000 feet from the ground. It appeared to be changing both colors and shape. a separate plane first approached the craft, only to have its radio cut out and become garbled. So, like, once it got relatively close, the shit started cutting out. And a short time later, Jafari and his backseat navigator, so there's like a dude behind him that's helping assist with the navigation, arrived and they saw the object begin to climb. It was flashing so intensely that the green, orange, and blue lights left Jafari unable to see the body through the collection of diamond-shaped colors. So, like, he couldn't really see a form to the craft, just this sort of sparkling diamond of all different colors. When suddenly, he's staring at this, and suddenly it jumps 10 degrees to the right in an instant. So, boom, just like that. It sounds like what he's talking about, John, is nearly fucking teleportation in this one.
That's a pretty good description. You know, when you're talking about just like a compass sort of heading, where he's looking at him at his 12 o'clock and then he jumps, boom, 10 degrees to the right. I mean, that's like a little hop as far as like moving places in space, and by in space, you know, just in the sky. But the key there is at a moment's notice. So the pilot, I'm trying to visualize what the pilot is describing and how he is saying is he didn't see active banking. He didn't see that initial change of inertia where the airplane kind of, if you look at video of when like fighter jets turn, they have this hard bank, their nose goes up a bit, and they sort of like slide a little bit before changing direction. What this pilot is describing is instantaneously, this thing is there, and then all of a sudden he's over here.
Yeah, and he uses the term jumping too, which is
different
verbiage than we've heard, I feel like.
Right. And that's you know, you have to wonder, man, I mean, if he's talking about this and he's also traveling at reasonable speed, you know, in an F-4 Phantom, which is a Vietnam era, very common fighter. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah. And so, of course, he asks, you know, do you guys got it on radar? You know, he says that they replied that the radar was out of order at the moment. But Jafari's backseat navigator, however, was able to get it on radar. And Jafari instructed him to, quote, break, lock, and repaint it, which apparently ensures, like you were saying on one of our, I think part two, John, or it might have been part one, that it's not like a mountain or something on the ground that they're locking onto. So he had him relock it.
Essentially. So the airplane radar works in very similar ways, except that it is much smaller equipment and much less capable than like a specific site with a radar antenna that just circles 360 degrees. It's very limited. It's sort of like a cone shape that only sees a certain angle from where the airplane is pointing towards. And it uses this for weather, to see upcoming storms, you know, towering cumulus clouds for thunderstorms, etc. What the radar systems officer, Rizzo, whatever you want to call it, the navigator, his backseat guy, what he was saying pretty much restarted. Like if you think of like a computer like acting up, like, hey, just restart it just in case so that we know that it's working right. So he disengaged the weapon system from it to recapture again, so that they can have like added evidence that, yes, that thing is really there and our system has a track on it.
And he says that after they relocked, they attempted to fire on it. So apparently the Iranians do not fuck around up there. They are just ready to lock and load on this fucking weird thing they saw. He tries to shoot.
Ask questions later.
Yeah, right?
Right, that's for forgiveness, right?
He tries to shoot and the weaponry jams. Next, now this shit is really where it gets fucking funky. Because next, a small round object then exited from the lights and came straight for Jafari at a rate of speed that you might expect a missile to. described as a, quote, brightly lit moon coming out of the horizon. That's how he fucking described it. He says he was terrified, and he tried to launch a Sidewinder missile at the objects heading his way, but at the moment when he fired the equipment, it shut down. Radio went dead, so he's literally in, like, looking his head back. He's screaming, trying to communicate with his boy in the back seat who's working the navigation. And because he was starting to consider the grim reality that he might have to fucking eject out of the plane if the projectile-like object got closer than 4 miles to avoid impact and being in the area of the explosion. He ended up being able to turn his way away from the object's path before it got that close. And then a second object came out of the lights, and the instruments that had briefly returned, you know, his capabilities with weaponry were once out again once that object came out. And that they were gone just as quick as they came back. This is fucking absurd. JP, what do you have to say about this? Fucking balls coming out of balls? Like,
it's fucking insane.
Is it not insane? Can you just picture being, just seeing some shit like that? Like, I can't even comprehend it.
I mean, if they have weaponry, it probably doesn't look like anything like what we use. So it'll probably look obscene, like something like a ball coming out of a ball. I'm surprised they don't look like a fucking flying pooch.
Right. So command radioed back to them to return, only for Jafari to notice that one of the objects was following behind him. So obviously he can't blow the thing up. It's neutralizing him. So they're like, the command's like, fuck it, get out of there, you know? And so the thing starts following him now. Then another object showed up ahead in front of him somehow. He said that the tower said that they had no traffic in the area. So even though this thing just fucking appeared, they're like, nope, no traffic. One of the objects then hovered, nearly landing on the ground about 15 miles away from him. He reported it to the tower, and they said that they saw it too. So the general, who was listening in on this whole conversation, now said, go and approach it instead of landing. And he's kind of like, fuck, man. Like, I really don't want to approach this thing, but I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? Because I have to. So he goes over there, and he said, as soon as he got within about 4 to 5 miles of the thing, again, all the radio cut out. Everything started garbling. Same thing as before. So he left that area and got in contact with them again. He's like, everything keeps going down when I go near these things. And then the general said, all right, return to land then. The object in the air vanished into thin air moments later. And Jafar would go on to say that he would be interviewed by like multiple people, including Americans. There was an American captain in the room taking notes when he was giving an oral report. And he was describing the moments when he couldn't fire. You know what I mean? And the American dude said, you're lucky you couldn't fire. Almost insinuating like he knew something, like it's a good thing you didn't fire. You know what I mean? That's the way he took it. And he always wondered like what he meant by that, you know, but he said he never got to actually ask him like what it meant. But that's kind of interesting, huh? The American shows up, right? So we're busy investigating UFO reports in other countries. Meanwhile, back home, we could give a shit less about everything that's going on here, right? And it's all a mockery. Yet we're in with the fucking Iranians asking the guy, you know, saying good thing you didn't shoot on it.
He probably said that because maybe it goes into the other conspiracy that the U.S. is so far advanced and they're responsible for the UFOs. So he probably meant like, you didn't fire on us. Good thing for you because we would have fucked you up.
There's also another school of thought where it's not that they don't necessarily, that they don't give a shit, is that they are constantly providing plausible deniability for political leaders. So if they were to start investigating things, let's say they have nothing to do with it at all, and they're just as unknown to the officials, let's call them U.S. officials, as they are to anybody else, that doesn't bode well for political leaders when citizens start asking questions or what on any subject, and their political leaders don't have answers. It doesn't look good from re-election.
Right.
So it behooves them to not get involved, which is why there's more, I guess, evidence. I don't really want to call it that, but there's more speculation pointed towards secretive investigations and sort of secretive curiosity in the U.S. compared to the outright open-air treatment to these sightings in other societies, in other parts of the world.
Well, I don't think you're off by saying evidence. I mean, we recently had that New York Times piece in 2007 that blew open the UFO investigations. So, I mean, the paperwork came out. They were investigating them while telling people that they weren't.
Yeah.
So there is evidence.
There's also, in the book, they have that slightly redacted official memo that redacted the countries that it was talking about. So it said that blank country has active investigations and the blank community has secret investigations. Like it had X's in the places of the countries, and the speculation by the author is that the first country was Russia, and the second listed in the memo was the U.S. What is it called? The U.S. intelligence community is what was blacked out. However you want to call it, I mean, the curiosity is there, but just how we're going to find out with the Phoenix Lights, political figures have this like defense mechanism to not give in to things that they can't blame for fear of their administrations pretty much just losing out and becoming duds.
Yeah, they're afraid it's going to contaminate their campaign. And like you said, we will get into that shortly, actually. But wrapping up the Iranian issue here, the pilots, after they landed, the pilots were checked into a hospital and examined, and a doctor told Jafari, he kind of ran out to him as he was leaving, I guess, and he told Jafari, hey, your blood wasn't coagulating. And then he took another sample from him and said he could go. And then Jafari said that the next 4 months they were ordered to get checkups, and I guess they kind of were evaluated. The planes were tested for radioactivity in this instance, but none was found. A 3-page document of the account was sent to the CIA, White House, and NSA. So there was an account that went to some interesting places. And that's everything on the Iranian issue. But I want to also mention, while we're not going to deep dive into it, one quick blurb is that a second similar incident occurred in 1980 in Peru when Oscar Santa Maria Huertas was ordered to interrupt what they initially believed was an aerial spying device. He sent a barrage of machine gun fire at the, quote, balloon-like object, which had no effect. 3 different times he locked onto the object to fire when it was in stationary, but each time at the instant it propelled itself straight upward. The incident was witnessed by over 1,000 soldiers and staff at La Jolla Military Base. So the people from the ground were watching this UFO jump up, come back down. He shoots, it jumps up, comes back down, like a fucking yo-yo is essentially the description that he's giving.
Yeah, I think that's the only one of the stories that actively got munitions out towards this unidentified craft.
Right. The only actual one to shoot, and like you said, the other ones, shit was disabled mysteriously.
And quick point on the Iranian thing, it's just a quick thing that came to my mind, was how unbelievable these pilots are. While everything is going on, he is continuing to kind of like risk analyze everything, and he's telling himself, I need to eject before this thing gets to a certain distance, because even if I do eject, if this gets close enough, I'll just be in the ball of fire and I'll die anyway.
It's insane, so, dude. Like imagine being on a conference call at work with like fucking, you know, eight people, and you're trying to give updates and things like that, but you're flying a fucking plane and there's some weird thing that you've never seen in your life. Like, there's all these variables. The pressure must be incredible.
And that's the incredible nature of these reports and the incredible credibility of these reports, where you have these highly trained guys experiencing these things, these guys that are able to multitask, for lack of a better term, like this. And while all of that is going on, he completely understands that, oh yeah, by the way, if I do eject, I better eject like sooner rather than later, because if not, I'm just going to be in the ball of fire. So it doesn't even matter. That's just unbelievable to me. That's so impressive, you know. And that's very common with this group, because these guys are selected. They go through such a rigorous training program. All of them do, all around the world. That when fighter pilots see things, people need to kind of, you know, pay attention.
Yeah, and I think Jafari, he should have that wallet from Pulp Fiction that says bad motherfucker on it, because
yeah,
he's a bad motherfucker, dude. You know?
Yeah. Yeah,
his name's Jafar.
And I think they have the Royale with cheese over there too. I think they use the metric.
At least I like to hope so. But anyway, moving on from these dogfights with UFOs, let's slide into the Hudson Valley UFO wave, which is the only other wave that we're talking about aside from the Belgian wave. And I think, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the two. So while America was keeping the topic of UFOs close to the vest and still treating them as an issue unworthy of the slightest discussion, they were filing reports on UFOs elsewhere, as we know. But in Hudson Valley, the UFO wave began in parts of New York and Connecticut beginning in December of 1982, and the wave lasted close to 2 years and involved repeated visits from massive, low-altitude hovering objects that often appeared more than one at a time. They also had extremely bright spotlights. Witnesses also said that some of the objects were as large as a football field and capable of shooting off and disappearing at extraordinary speeds. Most were silent or emitted a low humming noise. Traffic jams occurred on Route 84 when people on the highways pulling over started staring at the crafts in the sky. And while the police were unequipped to do little more than file these people's reports, local airports simply told the callers that there was nothing on their radar and they couldn't confirm the sightings, similar to what John was saying about what would normally be said, you know? They were some of the other similarities too to the Belgian wave was that they were non-aggressive. People said they flicked their car lights there too, and that the car lights responded, which I thought was interesting. And there were also simultaneous sightings by police officers with all, you know, with those traits that are similar to Belgium. For example, 12 officers in Danbury, Connecticut alone would have sightings after laughing off the initial reports. Many V-shaped objects were reported, and the red ball of light that was reported in Belgium was also seen in New York. So here's a couple of quick stories from Hudson Valley. These are real quick, and one is in July of 1984. David Athens, the fire chief, was standing outside talking to a policeman at the station when they both saw a row of lights in a circular pattern. He thought that it was man-made until two of the lights turned red and dropped down from the group, and they went in the direction of the mountains. One of them came back, the other didn't. That's pretty fucking weird. And then the other one is Jim Cook, biomedical engineer, reported a triangular object hovering no more than 15 feet above the water of the Croton Falls Reservoir late on October night in 1983. So picture that. A massive triangular object is right above the water, and Cook says he left his car to go and take a look at this thing, and he said he saw a red beam of light going from the underside of the object and said it seemed to be probing the water, like as if it was testing it, samples or whatever. And he said it moved around slowly, just probing different areas and retracting the beam back and forth. Lastly, before we kind of weigh in on the Hudson Valleys, the last thing is Leslie points out in the book that not much was done by our government again, right? She kind of hammers that home in the book in comparison to the other countries. Local coverage was there, but there was no one outside of local police that was involved, no national coverage of the incidents, and airplanes and helicopters were the answers that were given to people as for what they were seeing by some people. So I know you said already, John, you could sense her frustration in the book with the lack of investigating, and this is such a bizarre occurrence, and there's so many sightings in this one as well, and it's over a two-year period. Do you guys have what do you guys think about the Hudson Valley wave? This one's kind of close to us.
So the biggest thing is, yeah, her frustration. I remember this one part in the book. She mentioned as soon as the U word is said, the attitude changes in the room. You know, so it's sort of like, again, there's this stigma, there's this negative connotation in popular culture with UFOs, where you can't openly talk about them in sort of like a serious manner without ridicule or without some sort of like skepticism. So the investigation, if it's required, sort of like, you know, is dead before it even starts. And the people that have credible evidence towards it, or something that, you know, they're not even calling aliens or not calling anything specifically. They're just saying, hey, I saw this. Can you check it out and maybe get back to me and tell me what it was? And it never gets back. It never gets through the checkout part because people ridicule it so much that it's like, that's nothing, man. Get out of here. You know, it's get out of there with that. You know,
yeah, the tinfoil hat shit comes up.
It's sort of like it's a disservice because it's exponential. You're going to get to the point in history where no one's going to talk about it because they know that they're just going to be ridiculed so much, especially nowadays with social media where things could get blown out of proportion so much, you know? Let's say the current administration starts investigating. You could just see the late nights. You could just see the comedians of the world just pounding it, you know. Even if it was completely legitimate and like trying to do the right thing, it just wouldn't fly, man.
Absolutely, yeah. It's pretty crazy that that it just has that fucking stink on it, you know.
Yeah,
but. Yeah. I think we might be erasing it slowly with the recent events as we're working toward the Pentagon story and getting John your final take on that. We have one more real quick that we just want to hit, and it's the lights over Phoenix. Some people call it the Phoenix Lights. I want to ask Gene a question here. What do you think is the one thing that people remember about the lights over Phoenix when you think about it? Or do you not really have a recollection of the lights over Phoenix?
I don't have a recollection on that one.
Which that's telling in its own way, I guess. Is that it's such a major event, yet some people almost never even heard of it. What about you, John? I think we talked about this. What's the one thing that you remember from the lights over Phoenix and that you think everyone else remembers?
So that's definitely one that I do remember. And I remember for many different media outlets. Specifically, that's the one that you pretty much almost always see in like a compilation of unexplained episodes, like from like let's say Unsolved Mysteries or some show like that, right? They always sort of go towards that one. And the imagery are the specific lights in the night sky over the Phoenix, Arizona area.
Yep. That's definitely one of the things. And I think maybe tying that or in a close second is the guy in the alien suit at Governor Fife's Symington's press conference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the thing that always stands up. Yeah. And this one.
Which is the fucking smear job on it, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. And so everyone knows about that, because that's how that went down, was that the governor's office called out to the media and said, you're going to get the explanation. Tune in at this time. We're going to tell you. So they had a press conference, and he came out and with his chief of staff in an alien suit, this tall guy in this silly alien costume. The way he explained it and what he said later, I never ever heard.
And we're going to get into that, but I think we kind of wanted to start with the conclusion first on this one and fucking memento it, because it just shows the smear campaign. What everyone remembers the event for is people who said they saw something being mocked by some fucking alien in a suit by a politician. All right. But to your point, John, we're going to reveal to you, if you guys haven't heard, I'm sure there's some listeners who haven't heard, how this fucking ends, because it's quite different than it's portrayed historically. And this is important. On March 13th, 1994, over a decade after the Hudson Valley UFO sightings that we just covered, multiple triangular V-shaped UFOs made an appearance in Phoenix. Multiple families would be outside staring at the sky that evening. But it wasn't because they were looking for UFOs. This was a fucking happy coincidence, dude. They were actually all looking for the comet Hale-Bopp that was supposed to be visible that evening. So that explains why so many people fucking saw this thing. You know, there were so many reports because people had their eyes to the sky for other reasons. But apparently, this fucking thing, you would have noticed it from inside your house the way it sounds. So around 8 p.m., they would instead see an eerily silent, massive V-shaped craft gliding overhead. It was so big and so low that it blocked out the stars behind it. One traveled about 200 miles, creeping, right? From Paulden to Tucson and then past Phoenix. So it's going through multiple communities here. It was visible from 8:15 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And it's estimated that hundreds, possibly thousands, gazed upon this inexplicable sight. The police lines were jammed up. The local Air Force installation, Luke Air Force Base, was overwhelmed with calls, which they could not answer. ATT says they did not register the craft on radar, which many said was a mile long or multiple football fields. But like we've said earlier, John explained, you know, this is a low-flying craft. That's one reason why it might not be picked up. Another reason, potentially stealth-type technologies.
If I can interrupt you for a second, though.
Sure.
Another way that modern radar worked is everything is computerized now. What happens is the physical data, okay? So the radio wave that goes out to hit the object to then come back and be interpreted at the site is goes through computer interpretations to then go to software that's displayed on our hardware, our modern radar scopes, okay? What the speculation is with this, and it's very plausible, is that if the software doesn't see something as a possible airplane, because that's what our scopes are made to detect, airplanes, okay? It's going to see it as something else, like a cloud or a weather pattern, and display it differently on the scope than it would a radar target for an airplane. To say, let's say a big ball on the scope compared to like a medium-sized ball of a large airplane or something, you know, like how you would think it would display on the scope in layman terms. It could have been filtered out by the computer saying, this isn't an airplane. This is probably a big, like, overcast cloud, maybe a thunderstorm cloud or something. So I'm going to display it this way. So it could have been filtered out through the software because this is a modern radar signature being interpreted by computers. If it was raw data, even if this thing were to be caught by, let's say, older radar systems where they didn't have all this computer technology interpreting everything, they probably would have seen a gigantic disturbance on the scope returning something. So I just want to mention that because that's important. When somebody tells you they're not seeing anything on the scope, it's not necessarily that it's not there. Again, it's that there could be many factors involved. And in this case, it could be that the software itself was programmed to filter it out.
Yeah, and it's important to consider every plausible explanation. As you can see, there's many reasons it might not show up. It doesn't discredit anything about the stories that we're going to hear. And some of them are pretty bizarre. One of them was a family driving under it, and they were just describing how it took up most of the sky that they could see from outside of their car. Like, imagine just, that would be so freaky, some black fucking mass.
Is this the one where the person also describes, like, if they had a newspaper and held it up, they wouldn't have been able to cover it? Remember that one?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would say that would probably be accurate based on these other descriptions anyway, you know?
Right.
But it's a good visual to think about as you're listening. This one, particularly disturbing, an entire Little League game stopped as the massive object passed over the heads of moms, dads, and coaches, and they all stood awestruck in disbelief. They said it was a dark gunmetal gray color to this object. Speeds varied from motionless to speeding away in an instant. But I'm just picturing the baseball game coming to a dead stop in this fucking... Like, wouldn't you kill to fucking talk to one of these people that were at the baseball game?
And stories like that are what intrigue me because of the psychological aspect of this. What comes to mind to me? To me, comes to mind the beginning of a movie.
Yeah, right? It feels like a movie.
You see a low angle, like a low camera angle, maybe behind bleachers, sort of like scanning the area where somebody's looking straight out at the field, smiling, looking at little Jimmy about to pitch. And then their jaw drops and looks up.
And they're like, covered by this dark cloud.
Yeah,
right?
This is so ingrained to us to think of it as like this media event, this sort of like movie event. Again, it's detrimental to the investigation or to a possible investigation because we're so ingrained in this whole like, oh, this is a move. This is a subject of movies. This is science fiction. This doesn't happen, you know, that's where your mind goes and you can't help yourself but think of it in that way.
Yeah. And additionally, no government officials were dispatched to answer questions from these disturbed citizens, of course. And imagine there's this massive object that literally is terrifying several major cities and invades restricted airspace. Zero comes of it. Right. And we're just hearing from the local politicians, so to speak. They never interviewed even one fucking witness, any government officials about this. One city elected official spoke with over 700 witnesses, and she tried to get the ball rolling, but she ended up getting ridiculed by the media and her other elected officials, and even local paper cartoonists were like fucking making mockery of her.
Yeah.
So her shit ended without any fruits to bear. And on June 19th, Governor Fife Symington announced to the outraged citizens on television that he would be ordering a full investigation. Later that afternoon, he called a press conference telling people that he would reveal the real source behind the Phoenix Lights, as John stated before. He brought out the, quote, culprit, which is the fucking dude in the alien suit, And then told everyone essentially that they were taking it. He goes, this just goes to show you guys take this stuff way too seriously. That to me is fucking insane because I saw interviews from people and they said it was a slap in the face. Nobody listened to these. There's fucking craft. It feels like 100 yards or so above my house, hovering there, and no one says anything. And John, reading this book, and I know you said that there was another twist. Do you want to kind of divulge what's the twist that never got fucking publicized until years later on this, that nobody knows about? Yes, really?
So first off, what I want to say about the low-level official, was it a mayor or a city councilwoman?
It was a city councilwoman, yes.
Yeah, so that to me makes perfect sense, because let's say mayors, governors, even agency officials, like let's say a mid-level manager in the FAA, what they would do is they would contact the person above them, sort of like a chain of command thing. Hey, what do I do? I don't know. I'll get back to you. Let me ask my next chain link,
Right.
And then go over. And it takes so long that nobody knows any answers, so nothing ever gets done. So that's to me, that's sort of like a real world explanation of why nobody got any initial like questionnaire going or anything like that. And why the low level person was able to sort of like hit the floor running, because they didn't really have any much chain of command to really go towards. They're just like, hey, let me just figure something out, right?
Yeah, she just started talking to people from what it sounded like.
Yeah, she just started talking to people, right? That's not something that even I would do in my position. I would go to my immediate frontline manager and say, hey, what do you want me to do here? And that's how we're sort of conditioned in government to handle things. But anyways, aside from that, yeah, so later on it was discovered that the governor,
Fife Simonson, the guy who held the press conference with the alien in the suit and mocked everyone, right?
Actually saw it. And this was only discovered after the fact.
And he basically said that he didn't know what the fuck else to do at the time. Right. He wasn't getting any answers from anyone else that he was asking. He was the guy everyone was looking to. So he made this press conference to deflect attention and make people look silly so that he didn't really have to give an explanation. But in the book, he clears it up. And there's also video documentation. We're putting it up on evilexamine.com where you can see him actually go out to the spot where it happened. He said he heard some shit was going on. He drove out there and he was there with other people and fucking saw it.
He was afraid.
He felt guilty.
He was afraid that it would distract from the work that his administration was currently doing, and he didn't have any answers. So therefore, he thought that he would sort of lighten the mood to calm people down, and instead, he infuriated witnesses and therefore the general public, because it made it seem like he was mocking them, which I could see that he would stupidly do without necessarily doing it on purpose, but it still happened,
Right.
But it was ill-advised.
I think, in fairness, he doesn't seem like some asshole, but
right.
He came off like an asshole. And
but it was the wrong thing to do.
It was, and he said, he openly admitted he feels guilty about it, and to him, he's just as curious as all those other people in Phoenix from 1997 that had that bizarre experience. How fucked up is the Phoenix
Lights? This single event could have changed the sort of like the psychological effect around these sort of sightings. Having a United States governor saying while sitting, a sitting United States governor saying in public, I saw one of these things too.
Yeah. It's like after the fact, nobody gives a fuck, John, right? That's why it was interesting when you sent me the Trump article about the Pentagon stuff, which we'll be getting into in just a moment, to have, right. Like you said, it's very interesting to have a sitting president make a comment on a UFO video.
Right.
Sitting.
Right, because Gerald Ford was a famous witness, but he saw it before he became president. So it affected him, and he tried to make waves and tried to get things done, but... And like I said, in government, especially as a president, having 4 years to do something, what you're doing is you're getting used to the job your first year. you have 2 years of actual work, and then your last year you're campaigning again. So like you don't have time to do jack shit. But the key there is that, again, it's a high-level sitting official, like a governor or a president, saying this out loud would definitely change sort of like the trajectory of how these things are viewed, and hopefully even how they could possibly be investigated.
Yeah, and JP, what do you think? What's your evaluation on the Phoenix Lights?
Say anything other than it's fucking crazy.
It's crazy, right? There's a lot of people seen it. It's like that's a mass sighting.
It's just a reoccurring thing where you have witnesses and then you have people try to discredit those witnesses. It's the same story.
Right. Exactly. It's a broken record, man.
That's what it, yeah.
Well, guys, we hope that all the Evil Examine listeners enjoyed our recap of some of these most credible and, frankly, amazing UFO cases. Yeah. I mean, we really got in the ass crack of sightings today. Like, I mean, and in our past episodes. No, wouldn't you say? I mean, we fucking got in there. Like, we're talking, it's not just, oh, I seen an object in a field. Like, we're in there, dude. Yeah. You know?
We're deep in that cavity.
Yeah, and the stigma towards ass cracks should change too, man. Everyone's a lot cleaner here in the pandemic era. So ass cracks are fair game.
Yeah, we're all flying in the plane together, brother, you know?
Oh, so one more note. I'm actually losing battery here, but one more note about the Phoenix Lights that we didn't mention was that these sightings were several hours before the explanation and the actual photographic evidence of the Phoenix Lights being flares. That was dropped by the military hours after the sightings. So the time frame when these flares were dropped were well after these people saw these things, and that's how most. So if you want to add a quick note on that, Aaron,
that's a great point. Is that that's a huge thing. They say that it was flares in the sky, and the picture you always see of the Phoenix Lights was what John started with. It's a row of flares, and the time frame, like you said, the sighting started an hour earlier, and they're completely different descriptions than what the flares are. There were people that reported the flares, of course, but these fucking massive craft ones, it has nothing to do with lights, essentially.
Yes, and you never hear about those in the stories, like in the Unsolved Mystery episodes of the world. You always see the flare lights as the evidence in these stories on TV, which then can be, when people look it up, it's like, oh, it's just flares. It's like, boom, okay, look at that, it's just flares. And then they throw it away.
That was what they were able to use to kind of discredit all the stories, essentially.
Right.
But yeah, so that's the Phoenix Lights. It's absolutely fucking insane. There were other things in the book that went down in Brazil and Chile. Particularly with Brazil and Chile, there's a bunch of highly credible UFO stories on their own, but we can't cover the entire book. But on an important note, there is government acknowledgement from those countries as well. And the Brazilian Navy Ministry endorsed four images known as the Trinidad photographs. They passed through scrupulous validation as well, kind of like the Belgian UFO one. And they're considered bona fide UFO photos. And you can see them at www.evilexamined.com, and we'll put them up on the social media. There was other stuff in the book too, like the Sergeant James Pennington and Corporal Charles Halt have an unbelievable account that we don't have enough time to cover really, but there's going to be a documentary we put on that gives the actual audio, because he had an audio device during the fucking encounter while he's in the Army. And this is, John, this is the Army base. Oh no, Army. Is it Army or Air Force? I'm not sure if it's Army or Air Force, but it's the one in France or UK.
Okay.
American base that's in
UK. So it's an American Air Force base in the UK.
Yeah, and we'll have that story up on the website for you guys to check out. All right, so moving on from these amazing historical cases, the reason that whole sparked this whole shit to bring John the Aviator on is the acknowledgement of the United States acknowledging three UAP videos, unidentified aerial phenomenon. So the U.S. government Department of Defense officially released three videos depicting encounters between Navy pilots and unidentified aerial phenomenon. These events occurred between 2004 and 2015, but the videos didn't publicly surface until that New York Times article included them with a front-page story about the Pentagon's mysterious UFO program. This is the article we alluded to that came out in 2017. The Navy previously acknowledged that the videos... acknowledged that the videos are authentic, but the Pentagon never authorized them for release, and now it has. So the question of this Wired article is kind of like, does it matter that they acknowledge them, essentially?
Right.
So each of the three videos contains footage captured by Navy pilots that show a strange-looking oval zipping through the air over the ocean. These videos are on evilexamined.com, too, if you want to check them out. In the video from 2015 called Gimbal, the flying object is shaped like a tic-tac, and it whips through the clouds before it slows and begins to rotate. The pilot filming the encounter describes it over the radio as, "It's a fucking drone, bro." I will say, though, in this article, they don't say, like, later on where they're like, "No, dude, it's not a fucking drone. Like, it's, like, rotating and shit." You know what I mean?
Yeah, they say they have comments like excited comments like, "Look at it," like,
right,
like in complete disbelief.
Right. One guy, and he's trying to point to him saying it's a fucking drone like that was the ultimate conclusion, which is a misrepresentation of the video completely to anyone who watched it. In another video from 2015 referred to as Go Fast, a small white speck is tracked by a jet infrared system and it flies over the ocean. The oldest video, Flare 1, I think is what it's called, is also of a jet infrared system that shows an oval object rapidly accelerating. The videos were originally published by the New York Times and the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, a company founded by former Blink-182 frontman Tom DeLonge to research UFOs and other unexplained phenomena. When the videos were released in 2017, To the Stars staffers claimed that the footage had been through the official declassification review process and had been approved for public release. All videos were previously reviewed by the cognizant DOD authority under the 1910 process and were cleared for unrestricted release by the Department Office of Republication Security Review. So basically, he kind of makes a point in here that Pentagon officials described the 2017 release as unauthorized. 3 years later, DOD was finally ready to authorize the videos, even though they've already been watched by millions of people. And this was their quote. "After a thorough review, the department has determined that the authorized release of these unclassified videos does not reveal any sensitive capabilities or systems and does not impinge on any subsequent investigations of military airspace incursions by unidentified aerial phenomenon." Department of Defense officials wrote a press release published, and that was Monday, the week the news broke. So the official authorization of these videos, and he's saying, and this is the question that's a stupid one to ask, honestly. He says, and this is Wired. These are supposed to be fucking kind of intelligent, I feel like. But he's like, "Oh, does the authorization of these videos by the Pentagon mean that they finally admitted aliens exist?" And then he goes, "Nope," kind of sarcastically. And it's like, yeah, no fucking shit. Like, it does not take a rocket scientist to figure this out. He goes, "For starters, anything the military labels unidentified is not necessarily extraterrestrial." And so he kind of goes on through that type of shit. And it's like, yeah, this is obvious. In the case of the videos released this week by the Pentagon, it's still unclear what's in them. As a Department of Defense staffer notes in the press release, "The aerial phenomenon observed in the videos remain characterized as unidentified. The flying objects in the video might be aircraft, but if they are, they don't move like any aircraft that we're familiar with. Audio from the 2015 video suggests even that the pilots who filmed it couldn't understand what they were seeing. What the fuck is that thing? One of the pilots asked over the radio. What do you think about this, John?
So there's a lot of interesting points to this. First off, these sightings started happening recently, and by recently, I believe as early as 2004, because these run-of-the-mill F-18s, and by run-of-the-mill, I mean these are like your typical airplanes that the Navy uses on aircraft carriers. It's their primary fighter attack aircraft. They're referred to as F/A-18, fighter attack airplanes. So these are like what your average Joe fighter pilot for the Navy flies. They were equipped with new equipment from Raytheon, which is a very prominent military contract company. They do even work for us in the FAA. So they have big contracts with the U.S. government. And they put on these special newer equipments on these F-18s that these regular pilots just didn't have access to before. And all of a sudden, they could like see better, almost like getting new glasses. And now they're able to track and see these objects that before might have been like, hey, did you see that? No, not really. And then it's okay, let's just move on with our life. Where now it's like these videos are picked up by these forward-looking infrared or FLIR, FLIR, how the video is called, which is probably just a general title that was put on the video when it was sort of like downloaded or something. But the forward-looking infrared is now seeing this thing moving. And if you haven't seen the video, you gotta watch it, because the way it moves, the way it stays perfectly level while it's sort of rotating about, I would say, 5 to 10 degrees. I mean turning in space 5 to 10 degrees a second or so. It's pretty slow movement, sort of like steady movement, and staying perfectly level. And the F-18 pilot is following. It's pretty amazing. And again, very well-trained naval aviators are surprised and astonished by how this thing is moving and reacting. I mean, these are guys that on a daily basis go from 0 to 100 miles per hour on a jet launch of a naval, aircraft carrier. And that's just their normal wake-up time, So, like, this is like a... This is incredible to watch these highly trained men sort of like being go cuckoo crazy, sort of like little kids watching, a magic show.
Yeah, it's definitely something else. And I think one thing that the article does also state, if these were evidence of extraterrestrial activity or just advanced military aircraft built by another country, one would expect that the Pentagon would easily classify those videos faster than you can say Freedom of Information Act. But here's the thing, the DOD described the videos released this week as unclassified, which is not the same thing as declassified. Unclassified means that the military never thought the information was sensitive enough to slap the national security restrictions on it in the first place. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that has some sort of fishy smell to it, because normally, any sort of video that comes from these aircraft is immediately classified. And it's not because it's showing anything weird. It's because there's a possibility that it can have evidence in some sort of like footage or data on it that could be sensitive to the security of the forces, or let's say location. You remember during the Iraq war, the big thing for the news reporters were never give out the location because it could jeopardize the lives of the soldiers that you're embedded with. So that's some of those things. It could have data that could be sensitive that, yeah, we could release the video, but you can't see these numbers on the bottom right just because of it's the proprietary technology or something like that. So it's usually almost immediately classified. And if the information is requested, it goes to that special office that you mentioned, and then it gets redacted or some parts of it are kind of cut out and be like, okay, here you go, here's the unclassified or declassified version. That for them to call it unclassified where it was never classified is kind of odd, considering that this was a strange event reported by naval aviators and with new technology on their airplanes. It's very weird.
Yeah, multiple strange events, right? And
Yeah.
And so the article kind of wraps up by saying, you know, ultimately the release of these videos is nothing more than the Department of Defense giving their stamp of approval. But that doesn't mean the mystery is finished. And this is a quote from Luis Elsdano, who he's a former DOD representative who's with To the Stars Academy now. And he did say, this historic acknowledgement will cause a seismic shift in the attitudes and stigma surrounding these events, allowing more reputable institutions to openly share reliable data for research. It will be looked at for years to come as a fundamental step in gaining people's trusts. And then the writer of the article kind of says, well, unless, of course, you trust no one. Kind of being a dickhead right at the end. But I think it's a great thing to end on this quote just because of the journey we've been on through these three-part most credible cases. You really should understand how seismic it is because of how much it was ignored for decades and decades and decades, right? At least in the public eye, right? And how,
yes.
Look no further than the Phoenix case we just wrapped up. You know, now from that to this, it's completely different.
And that's why I enjoyed this book so much, because the bottom line is that anything that has to do with this sort of like unknown that affects people in such a strong way should earn the respect to be properly investigated without jumping to any sort of conclusion from the crazy to the sort of just a straight ignorance of some of these officials that have for so long just completely ignored it, and have somebody properly investigate these things to give these eyewitnesses some sort of like, I guess, a little bit of respect and some sort of hope that somebody could come back to them with a reasonable explanation, however mundane or incredible it might be.
Absolutely. And so, Gene, what's your take on the recent revelations in the videos?
I wish I would have saw the videos themselves.
You haven't seen the videos?
I haven't.
What the fuck?
Oh, they're crazy, dude. When you watch them, they're insane.
I think that's what I pulled up before we started recording, but I didn't get a chance to look at it. But I think it's a step in the right direction, having more of that stuff released,
yeah,
available to the public.
I think it definitely makes you consider, like, what the fuck else haven't they released, right? If they've been sitting on that.
Absolutely.
And that's unclassified, right? So what the fuck is classified, you know?
Yeah, but again, equipment-wise, anything that comes, you know, as time goes on and things just become more available and cheaper, even in the military aspect of it, you know, money matters in the military too, where you're going to have more and more higher resolution video, photographs, you know, and opportunities to capture in media events where we just talked about so many different examples and stories and accounts with very, very, very little photographic, either, you know, video or stills, photographic evidence. So as time goes on, you're just going to have, again, with everybody having smartphones, there was one story from I don't know if it was the Iranian story or the Portuguese story, where the pilot said it was unfortunate that they didn't have their onboard recording equipment,
mm-hmm.
because they would have been able to capture it. And something happened where it just wasn't in the plane. So again, it's frustrating when you hear things like that, because you would wish that things like that were captured, regardless of whether or not they'd be released. That's another story, right?
Right.
But at least it's there somewhere.
And I think it's also technology's part of the problem too. Like when we talk about the hoaxes and everything that contaminates the ufology following, I guess. But I guess we should, as we wrap this up, you know. So, what do you think it is? What do you believe, John the Aviator? And if so, what do you believe in?
My education and my background lead me to believe that maybe something happened in the past or certain things have happened where if there are things routinely flying around, it's probably a backward engineered product of something that was found. So not necessarily extraterrestrial, but something that came from an extraterrestrial thing. So yes, I'm saying pretty much that I believe that there's something out there, because I can't think that we are the only critically thinking beings in the entire universe. And the book alludes to sort of like, but wait a second, you know how long it takes to travel, you know, through the whatever, but if you think of how old the universe is, and let's say we're somewhere near the center, so somewhere in the edges of the universe has been developing their society, their technology for millions of years. So yeah. If you just think of aviation, right? Because here I am talking about aviation. Aviation in the last 100 years alone has grown so rapidly, from 1903 first flight to 1969. Okay, you're talking 66 years. We ended up on another planetary body.
Yeah, well, the technology is like at a doubling rate, right? They say
it's insane,
and it's like insane. that century period. Like, we went from the horse and carriage to the fucking car to the airplane, yeah. Like you said, and it's like,
yeah,
it's like, what were just we doing those other 2,000 years? Alone,
like, you went from not being able to fly. You went from people saying, no, man cannot put something heavier than air out into the air. It's impossible. That's what people would say. The Wright brothers come out. They fly something in 1903. By 1930-something, I can't remember the exact date, we had the jet engine developed by the Germans. You know, in late 40s, in the 50s, we have common military jet airplanes going into commercial jet airplanes. In less than 50 years, we have this, we go from not being able to fly to being able to travel at 400, 500 miles an hour in the air at altitude.
And you're like,
breaking
the sound barrier many years after that, landing on the moon just a decade after that.
And it's so like,
it's insane. It's insane to think about this. And it's sort of like ignorant to think that, again, something that's been theoretically developing their society for millions of years, their technology for millions of years, because they're that much more ahead of us, being, let's say, in that part of the universe that came first, right? For lack of a better term. It's totally plausible that something could have come back to this area and left something or made some sort of contact.
And I think I tend to agree with your analysis in that, you know, I think something was probably a trinket of some sort, or maybe there was contact. Maybe there was,
yep,
discussions. Yep. I mean, we do not know, but it's certainly plausible. And I think that maybe in some future episodes of Evil Examined that we should really think about going outside of the globe, taking it to space with some of these conversations, and, you know, learn about the evidence that's out there and other assumptions maybe that scientists have, you know, outside. I think it's definitely possible an otherworldly explanation for it. What about you? What about you, JP? Do you believe? How do you land on this?
See, a lot of people tend to reach outward to like extraterrestrial and outside of our own world, but there's a lot that's in our own planet that we don't have. We barely scratch the surface of, like the oceans, for example. We barely scratch the surface. We dipped our toes in that.
And it's
in that realm.
And it's funny.
And you never know, like.
Not to interrupt,
like,
you, Gene.
You see.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to add, like. I think you're right with like the fucking USO shit, right? The unidentified submerged objects. And there's reports of objects interfacing with the water into the air, and we can't get down there. So to your point, I think we need to fucking take a look at that sometime too.
Yeah. Like terrestrial stuff could be,
yeah,
be the source. Like, and you see like Bermuda Triangle, for example, you see a lot of that, those cases where the, there's disruptions with equipment and all that stuff. in certain areas of water, body of the water. And there's a lot of civilizations that are completely sunken. We haven't discovered yet. Who knows if there's an alien civilization that maybe we uncovered some technology from reverse engineered.
Yeah, there's definitely reports of materials being found that are so old, but yet they're the equivalent to having like a fucking airplane at that time. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's an interesting thing to look at. But I think we've really, like I said, gotten the ass crack of this issue. Given some interesting food for thought, to say the least. I want to say thank you to John the Aviator. This would not have been a third, you know, we couldn't have made it a third as entertaining as it was without you. And the insight.
And your expertise.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is going to be fucking amazing. I think people are going to really enjoy this. And guys, let us know if you enjoyed it. I want to bring John on for other stuff too. We're going to be doing a upcoming episode about car hacking as well. Maybe, John, we'll postpone until we can get you back for that at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be a part of that.
Yeah, because I think John's a car guy too. He's a good. You're good on like the technological front for this type of shit. So I think he would weigh in some good insight. But we want to thank you guys. Go to www.evilexamined.com to check this shit out. As far as the videos, the photographic evidence. Yeah, I mean, also, right, Gene, the Evil Examined is on the Instagram platform and Facebook, and we're putting out extra evil entries. You might have seen our Mexico UFOs.
As well as Twitter.
As well as Twitter, or fucking, you know, I mean, we did a piece on Agent Orange. We did a piece on delusions where you think your family turns into clones and you kill them. There's weird shit going on out there, and we're fucking kind of capturing it all and putting it into small bite-sized posts for you guys. So I guess that's it. This is the end of the third part. Most credible UFO cases. Everybody, we will see you next week. Take care.
Yeah, whatever your name is, say.
Or anybody else was in there against their will.